Welcome back to the United States Senate Fisheries Debate. We'll now switch back to questions from our esteemed fisheries panel. And the candidates will have 1 minute to respond to the same question. We'll begin with Senator Murkowski, and then the order will go on to Colonel Stock, Mr. Metcalf, and Brett Craig. So, who is going to ask the first question over there? Thank you, Mr. Stevens.
Senator Murkowski, the fishing industry currently has a temporary exemption from being required to hold an EPA permit for incidental water discharge, such as, for example, from live and refrigerated seawater tanks, routine deck washing, and other similar activities. This exemption expires in December 2017. Do you believe a permanent exemption is warranted for commercial fishing vessels? And if so, how would you go about obtaining the exemption?
Well, I know that there is an exemption in place because I worked with Senator Boxer from California to put that exemption in place about a half a dozen years ago. She and I both agree, it's a bipartisan agreement, that this needs to be made permanent. It's almost incredible to think that a fisherman would be subjected to a reportable incident by way of the EPA for simply hosing the fish guts off the deck. And that's effectively what this regulation puts in play. It literally has the potential to stop the day-to-day work of fishing in order to comply with this. So we've had temporary extensions over the years. We are working to get a permanent exemption that is part, actually, of something that we've been trying to put in other vehicles to close this out before the end of the year. We want it done this year, and I am committed to making sure that we don't have to do extensions, don't have to put that uncertainty into place.
Thank you. Colonel Stock,
I agree that there should be an exemption. It should be permanent. It speaks to the dysfunction in Washington and the inability of our congressional delegation to get their work done, that we've had continuous short-term extensions over and over and over again, and they can't seem to make it permanent. And every time somebody comes to this debate, I think they promise that it's going to be permanent, and it never happens. We just get short-term extensions.
Thank you. Representative Metcalf.
I'm, once again, not a fishing expert, but I think from what I've heard here today, the reg probably needs to be rewritten a little bit. When I was in the legislature, I lived on a houseboat for 1 year. And the harbor there that I lived in was a bit smelly because of all the stuff washed off there in the harbor. And so I do think that there's some regulation that needs to be effective, and I believe in keeping our harbors clean. And so discharges need to be regulated, washing off decks, inside the harbor shouldn't probably happen. And so I don't have a problem with some regs. And without having firsthand knowledge of the regs, I'd have to defer further comment.
Thank you.
Mr. Craig.
I agree with Representative Metcalf. I think that it's, and with Senator Murkowski and Colonel Stock as well, in that if it's washing off during a fishing boat's working out on, the sea, I think that's one thing, especially if there's no fuel involved, if it's just, fish and related biomass stuff. But I think there should be regulations inside harbors and contained waters where there's not real good flow, and especially if it involves petroleum products and things like that. So. Not having intimate knowledge of this exemption and what it exactly covers, I would support it with, conditions.
Thank you all. We'll go then now to Julie Metoyer, and the first question will go, or the next question will go to Colonel Stock.
Yes, Ms. Stock. As Arctic waters warm, Vessel traffic through the Bering Sea and the Bering Strait is increasing, which in turn increases the risks of an oil spill or other marine incident, which would have huge impacts on Alaska's fisheries and other marine and coastal resources. What would you do to ensure that spill prevention and response capabilities keep pace with increasing maritime traffic demands?
I think that's a great question, and it's critical to the future of Alaska that we have appropriate spill response forces in place. We don't have them right now. The Coast Guard has repeatedly stated we don't have anywhere near the needed capacity to deal with a spill or another other accident up in the Arctic. And depending on the time of year, it could take weeks or longer for Coast Guard vessels and other support teams to arrive on the scene. I think it's absolutely critical as we move towards an open Arctic that we get those resources in place. And I would support extreme funding of the Coast Guard. I don't want them to take resources away from Kodiak to go up to the Arctic. I'd like to have resources in both places. So I would support a lot of Coast Guard funding. I would support oil spill response capability. I'd also support more research, and I'd support the continued use of safety equipment that's required when oil drilling occurs in the Arctic to make sure that we don't have the Deepwater Horizon incident happening in the Arctic. And of course, for those of you who might not remember that, that was the state-of-the-art drill rig that exploded in 2010 and killed
11 workers. Thank you, and if you would sum it up, thank you very much.
Right.
Representative Metcalf.
I think that the federal government needs to get very busy bringing up icebreakers and establishing several, not just one or two, Coast Guard facilities up in that area, and probably some naval facilities. The Russians are moving massive amounts of military up there. Last I heard a report not too long back that they have over 50 naval facilities up and down the coast across from us. And you know, there's opportunity opening up there, and if we don't fill it, the Russians will. And so you need look no further than Syria to know what will happen if you leave this void. And So we need to get in there, and we need to create better facilities. And there's one other thing that I think we need to, I see I have a yellow light, I'll continue that thought later.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Craig.
I agree. We absolutely need to ramp up to protect the Arctic. Spill prevention, given the new field that was discovered outside of Barrow. The Coast Guard funding absolutely should be going the other way. It should be cut. I think we do need to open up additional Coast Guard or reopen the Coast Guard bases on the chain. We need to reopen old World War II Navy bases, Sitka, Whittier, if we have to, and maybe put forward operating bases up there. The acidification of the oceans, things like that, we need to go to the source of that problem, which is actually mainland China and their pollution. And we need to sue them because they're acidifying our oceans. They're probably going to end up destroying our king crab fisheries.
Thank you, Mr. Craig.
To be very aggressive. It's yellow.
It's yellow, yep.
I was good. That's it. Otherwise, I agree with the rest of the panel.
Thank you.
And Senator Murkowski.
Thank you. Good comments. Clearly, we need more assets in the Arctic. There's no question about that, whether it is additional Coast Guard capability, whether it's helicopters that are stationed out of Kotzebue, national security cutter, icebreakers, the resources that we need. We need to be working cooperatively with our northern neighbors when it comes to oil spill prevention and response, as we have set up through the Arctic Council. But it's more than just having the plans, it's more than having the search and rescue, it's also making sure that we have safer waterways, making sure that we have navigational aids up in the Arctic. We are not positioned where we need to be. It is making sure that we know clearly what the rules of the road, so to speak, are in the Arctic in terms of these navigational corridors, working with the IMO to determine this. The Polar Code, the standards coming down through the Polar Code are helping to make sure that we're going to have safer vessels, but all of this needs to be coming together in a very timely and aggressive manner.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. And we'll go now to Julie Bonney. If you'd ask a question, the first responder will be Mr. Metcalf.
Representative Metcalf. The Partial Coverage Observer Program in the North Pacific is financed with approximately $4 million from industry via tax on fishing landings. $1 million from the NIMS budget was used to supplement the program, but this funding ended this year. Do you think the shortfall in funding for the Observer program should be rectified, and if so, how?
I think the industry needs to pay for itself to begin with. You know, if it needs a subsidy, there's a problem. As far as observing goes, I believe that if you're going to fish 24 hours a day, you need to be observed 24 hours a day if you're a bottom trawler. So that would be my answer.
Thank you.
And the next one that will go then to Mr. Craig.
I actually don't agree, Ray. I think that the observer should be funded by the state and the federal government. I think that it's very important to have an objective outside party observing these activities, and I don't think it should be put on the industry to pay for that. I think that we should have objective outside parties measuring our catches and recording them. That shouldn't be something that the processing plants have to do. And that would verify for all parties concerned that the catches were weighed correctly and the species were accounted for.
Thank you. Senator Murkowski, I believe, is
yes.
First. Thank you, Julie. I think it's important for us to recognize that here in this state, we have led with observers. Ahead of all of the other councils, we have led as Alaskans in putting observers on our vessels, and we have done it through the taxing fee. But what is now being proposed and put in place in other fisheries areas, regional management areas, are an observer program, and everyone is waiting to get their federal dollars. Well, we've already stepped up. We have moved on it. We are working to make sure that our fisheries are good and strong and sustainably managed, and there's a level of accountability. But it's also more than just the human observer. It's what we need to be doing with electronic monitoring. We recognize that nowadays we can all do so much with any kind of an electronic device, so making sure that NOAA is moving aggressively on electronic monitoring is another part of this answer when it comes to observing and making sure that we're all accountable here.
Ms. Stock, do you want me to repeat it, or?
I understand the question. I think we all understand we don't want the resources that are very valuable wasted, and the Observer program is an important part of making sure that important and valuable fishery resources are not wasted. I think the ideal is 100%, but observers are very, very expensive, and the cost of an observer is probably much more. It is much more than going to new forms of technology such as the new age electronic monitoring. So I'd like to see more funding going into the things that are probably going to be giving us accurate data but are less expensive. And a combination of observers and electronic monitoring seems to make sense to me from a cost-benefit analysis.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. We'll now go to a second round of questions by our panelists. Mr. Stephen.
And I believe Mr. Craig
will be the first respondent.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Craig, what is your philosophy on the role of the Fishery Management Council process versus the use of congressional legislation for the management of our federal fisheries?
I think the fisheries council process is a much more scientifically sound process. I think it was, if memory serves, created specifically to take as much of the political influence out of the process. In that regard, I think it does very well, as the sustainability of Alaskan fisheries testify. I think there are some issues. I think that the science is a bit divorced from the human element, especially when it comes to subsistence fishing rights. Those are issues that need to be addressed, but overall I think the council process is a much more sound process.
Thank you. Senator Murkowski.
Well, thank you. I have stated many, many times that I support the council process. You know, when you think about what Senator Stevens did when he developed this regional Fisheries Management Council system. It was a bottom-up, stakeholder-driven process, and that's how we should be managing our federal fisheries. Congressional legislation is not the way to manage our fisheries. It's certainly not the best way to manage our fisheries. And you know, we know that we have issues, we know that we have conflicts between users, but making sure that we respect the process council, making sure that we respect that this is management from the ground up, I think is the philosophy that we need to continue with. It has held us in good stead, and I certainly stand behind the good work of the council.
Thank you. Ms. Stock.
Well, I think that Magnuson-Stevens has been a success story in the system that it set up for Alaska. I think it's been a model for the nation. I'd like to see it continue. I know occasionally there are calls for Congress to step in and tinker with pieces of it. And of course, the goal to keep in mind there is sustainability of the fishery and sustaining local communities in Alaska as well. So you don't want to tinker with it in a way that's going to cause multinational corporations, for example, to step in and start making decisions in a way that wouldn't sustain our local communities in Alaska. So I'm pleased with the process. I want to see the Magnuson-Stevens Act reauthorized very shortly, hopefully. I think most Alaskans support that. And you know, the way to solve these problems, I think, is not to have micromanagement from Congress, because Congress can't even pass a budget. So asking them to fix allocations in the Alaska waters is not possible. I mean, they just don't have the time for that, since they can't even do their existing legislative tasks.
Thank you. Representative Metcalf.
I would defer to the councils in most cases, in almost all cases, on the science. I think that they're the place that we need to look for proper implementation of the scientific knowledge and that we learn from the studies that we do. I also think that there are things that the councils won't do on their own. There's some legislative oversight that's needed. There are times when a legislative referee is required.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. We'll go on to Giulivani, and the first respondent will be Senator Murkowski.
Actually, it's Julie. I'm sorry,
Julie Medwayu.
That's fine. But you had the correct respondent, Senator Murkowski. Scientists estimate that oceans are more acidic due to increased levels of atmospheric carbon dioxide from fossil fuel combustion and land use change. Scientists expect Alaska to experience the effects of ocean acidification faster and to a greater degree than lower latitudes due to colder water temperatures, ocean circulation patterns, and other environmental factors. Ocean acidification has the potential to disrupt the Alaska fishing industry. Alaska communities need viable strategies to respond to these changes. How can you, as an elected senator, address this concern?
I'm the co-chair of the Senate Oceans Caucus, and the very first meeting that we had with other colleagues, I serve on this with my counterpart from Rhode Island, Democrat Senator, Senator Sheldon Whitehouse. The very first issue we had in front of us that I proposed was a focus on ocean acidification, taking our experts from the University of Alaska system, bringing back to DC to speak directly to what we are seeing and the potential impacts, the threats to us. Better understanding what is happening with our oceans and the impact from increased acidification, increased warming temperatures, the impact that it will have on not only our fisheries, but our fisheries communities. This is something that we cannot be dismissive of. We cannot say this isn't happening to us. This is real, and it will have impact. So what we do to make sure that we have the data, the research, the understanding that it's going to take to deal with this is a big challenge for all of us as Alaskans, and certainly at the federal level.
Thank you. Ms. Stock?
Climate change is real. I'm not a career politician. I do believe in science. I know that science tells us that humans are having an impact on their climate, and this is resulting in acidification of the oceans around Alaska. We're particularly susceptible because we have colder water, and so it happens faster. And this is having, of course, a terrible impact on shellfish. As you know, the scientific process impacts the most on the shellfish. So I think it's absolutely critical that first we recognize what's happening, we get the best minds onto the problem, and we work to mitigate the effects of climate change.
Thank you. Representative Metcalf.
You know, Congress is dominated right now by people who are global warming deniers. And they would put this off and not deal with it. And Lisa has the difficulty of dealing with a caucus that, frankly, thinks this isn't an issue. I think it is an issue, and if I am elected, that will swing the balance to the Democratic side, which thinks this is a problem. So I think that putting a Democrat in instead of a Republican makes sense for Alaska.
Thank you. And Mr. Craig.
Absolutely, it's an issue. It's baffling to me why we didn't aggressively start dealing with this a decade ago. I agree with Ray that you know, Congress is dominated by representatives that are denying there's even an issue up until real recently. I think we need to be very aggressive about where the pollution's coming from. And for Alaska, what I understand the science to be, a lot of it's coming from Asia. A lot of it's airborne. A lot of it's the rivers are just, you know, they don't treat sewage, they dump it. It's all coming across in the Pacific Current, and we're having to deal with it. I think we need to be very aggressive, and we need to go back, and we need to, you know, prosecute. We need to sue these people. We need to sue the countries that we believe are polluting our waters. And the time for talk is over. I mean, we need to continue the science, but I think the science is pretty well developed. You know, it's time for action. And we should have been doing this a decade ago.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We will now go to Julie Bonney. And Julie, if you'd post your question, we'll begin with Margaret Stock.
Ms. Stock, the Magnuson-Stevens Act, or MSA, is currently up for reauthorization through Congress. Do you favor changes to the bill? And if so, what would they be?
I do favor the bill. I think it should be reauthorized. I've been talking to a lot of folks about changes that might be needed to the bill, but overall I think the structure is correct. I don't anticipate any major changes. I'd be most worried that because of infighting in Congress, it doesn't get reauthorized, and that would be an absolute disaster. So I'd rather see an authorization that keeps everything in place rather than having a big fight on Capitol Hill over lots of things that cause the bill to be completely derailed.
Thank you. Representative Metcalf.
I think it should be reauthorized, but I think it needs some changes. And, you know, when I look at the catch shares issue, you know, I look at Iceland. And Iceland went into, they started catch shares many years ago. They've now decided it was a giant mistake, and they're clawing them back. And I think we need to think about the same thing.
Mr. Craig.
Yes, I also support reauthorizing Magnuson-Stevens. I think I'd like to see there be in the new bill much more clarity and to strengthen the subsistence fishing clauses in the act to help the native villages, you know, better, you know, secure their rights for subsistence fishing, which I think they've been relegated to kind of a secondary role, even though the existing act clearly says that subsistence fishing rights are paramount. All you have to do is look at the Yukon River and what's going on there with the king salmon, so.
Thank you. Senator Murkowski.
Thank you. Yes, I believe that the Magnuson-Stevens Act should be reauthorized and reauthorized soon. I recognize that we've got differences between where the House has gone and where we are working in the Senate. I've kind of always looked at the reauthorization as being one where we need to make sure that we do no harm and that we protect the North Pacific and our Alaska fisheries. So my interest is very keen in that regard. There are other issues that I think we might also look to as we're talking about MSA reauthorization. There's been a lot of discussion about how we are able to market our seafood. We're working with folks with the American Fisheries Advisory Committee to help promote and market our domestic seafood. I think this is something we need to be working on. the nomenclature for the golden crab and observer program issues, as was mentioned earlier. So as we take up MSA, we have some other important Alaska-related issues, but do no harm to the North Pacific and the Alaska fisheries.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. We'll move on to another question. Jeff Stephen, if you have one, we'll begin with Mr. Representative Metcalf.
Representative Metcalf, fishery monitoring is extremely important for fisheries management. The Federal Groundfish Observer Program in Alaska is the oldest and largest observer program in the nation. Industry and managers have been working very hard to establish a new approach by expanding monitoring to include electronic monitoring, i.e. cameras, along with the continued use of human observers as appropriate. Do you support electronic monitoring as a monitoring tool? And if yes, how would you assist with the integration of electronic monitoring into the current observer program?
I think that electronic monitoring should be required. I also think that observers should be required 24 hours a day if you're going to fish 24 hours a day. And if there's ever a dispute between the observer and the fishing company, you have a monitor there to verify what happened, or at least look to for hopefully some backup on the you know, who did what and what happened. You know, I've heard that it's expensive, you know, compared to the income of a trawler. You know, it's the observer is just not a big deal. I just don't buy into that. I may have been misunderstood earlier in saying that you know, that they should pay for it. Frankly, they shouldn't. The government should pay for it, but the fees should be collected from the fishing industry for the government to pay for it. The industry should not be subsidized. And so I'm all for observation.
Thank you.
So Mr. Craig. We'll go on to Mr. Craig then.
Yeah, Mr. Craig. Yes.
Yeah, I also support electronic monitoring, but I think it has to be, you know, it's not one size fits all. I mean, as everybody knows, some of the smaller boats, it's a real burden to have to haul an observer. I mean, the crew quarters as they stand can be incredibly tight. I think for the larger boats, the larger operations, absolutely you have observers and you have monitoring. For the smaller boats, it would be nice. It kind of speaks to what Margaret said. You know, they are expensive. And if the government's going to pay for it, you know, we are the government, we are the taxpayers, we should deploy the monitoring devices where we can. But if it's a big operation, a big boat, you should probably have both.
Thank you. Senator Murkowski.
Thank you. This has been an issue that we've been pushing on it for so long, and it's so frustrating that it has taken as long as it has. We have seen the advances in the technology that allow us to gain this data. We know that. So we've been putting the fire under NOAA to move on this. We've had some folks that have just drug their feet when it comes to advancing electronic monitoring. As Breck has said here, electronic monitoring can be a really big deal if you are on a small vessel. I'm down in Craig and talking to the fishermen down there, and they're saying, come on my boat and let me show you what I'm going to have to do in order to put an observer on this boat. I've actually asked the head of NOAA, Dr. Kathleen Sullivan, to join this fisherman as a guest on his boat for a week as he goes out black cod fishing so that she can see for herself what this really means. You know, we laugh about it, but they make it sound so easy that you can just go out and put another person on your boat who's not an active crewman when you don't have much room on your boat.
Ms. Stock.
Well, if you're going to do 100%, a human can't stay awake for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so it's not just one person. You have to have more than one person. You have to account for people getting sick, wanting to sleep, have meals, that sort of thing. It is incredibly expensive to have 100% coverage of human observers. But we now have high-quality video cameras. We have a pilot program now that a lot of folks in Kodiak are participating in, and they speak highly of it. And I think as this high-quality technology becomes more and more available, it makes sense to substitute cameras and 100% retention for humans. It makes perfect sense, and it's a great way to reduce the taxpayer dollars that are currently being spent to fund the Human Observer Program. And I would support that.
Thank you.